You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kind of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video-on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to a new episode of The Effective Statistician. Today I'm interviewing Holger Fröhlich. Hi Holger, how are you doing?
Hi Alexander, I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good, especially as I'm talking to you about a very interesting initiative. But before we dive into that, maybe Holger, you can shortly introduce yourself. What have brought you to the position where you are now?
Yeah, so I'm heading the AI and data science group at the Fraunhofer Institute for Algorithms and Scientific Computing in St. Augustine, close to Bonn. And I'm also a honorary professor at the University of Bonn. And yeah, so what brought me into this position is, in essence, on one hand, I would say my interest in research in data science. But on the other hand, also at the same time, an interest to translate this research into application, specifically to benefit patients. I've gone through a number of career steps also, which brought me to different positions in academia, but also, for example, pharma industry, in fact. And I ended up somehow in between. So Fraunhofer is, if you think about it, something like the bridge between the research that's typically done at universities in Germany and research and development and industry. Our mission is to be a translator between both sides.
Okay.
And this is what we play in different projects, sometimes in one-to-one with industry partners and sometimes as part of larger consortia.
And that is exactly the topics we want to talk about today. Here comes the first acronym, IHI. What does that stand for and where is it coming from?
IHI stands for Innovative Health Initiative, the largest public-private partnership in Europe, in the healthcare sector at least. And IHI has, in essence, the mission to bring together academic partners as well as pharma companies and companies from the medtech field. And so the idea is to do research projects together in a joint manner. Yeah? So there's really people sitting from both sides, from all these sectors together, and they really try to tackle very challenging and innovative problems.
And this is originating from the former code IMI, now just IHI, because it's not just the pharma industry, but also the medtech industry. If you have heard about IMI Prefer or IMI Protect, or IMI Get Real. There were a lot of these initiatives in the past that yielded quite interesting finding and very good collaboration between pharma and academics supported by the European. So let's go a little bit more specifically into the, and that's a pretty big consortium. And within that, there are different, I'm not sure how they're called, but streams. specific groups working on that. Tell me about what you are working on.
We are currently in 3 different IHI projects. One of them is focusing actually on setting up a federated learning platform for Europe in order to connect health data. So the other one is focusing on a platform for earlier dementia diagnosis. The third, called Cynthia, focuses on synthetic data generation, evaluation, and setting up a platform.
This is the one we want to dive a little bit deeper into today, because synthetic data is quite en vogue. There's a lot of different terms that are flowing around, and we want to double click onto this. Let's start with the basics. What is synthetic data for you?
The term synthetic data is, of course, not standardized in some way, but there's also different understanding about it. But in Cynthia, at least, the focus is on AI-generated synthetic data. So that means, in practice, so you have, at the beginning, real data. So in this case, real patient-level data. And you train a generative AI model on this data. Generative AI model learns the statistical distribution which the data probably was sampled from. If you learn the statistical distribution, you can sample from this distribution again.
Yeah.
And this generates your synthetic data. So in some sense, this is similar as if you had, in a very simplistic term, learned the parameters of a distribution, and now you're sampling from it. This is the simplified notion.
Sounds like bootstrapping, isn't it?
In a way. Yeah, at the end of the day, so we are not practically using bootstrap here, yeah, but other techniques, often in our case, for example, often variational inference, yeah, which is an approximate Bayesian inference technique. Yeah, but at the end of the day, the underlying idea is really, so you have real data and you try to deduce characteristics of the underlying statistical distribution such that at the end of the day, you can sample from it.
When it comes to this underlying data, let's go into details there. So this underlying data, for example, this typical baseline characteristics like age, gender, severity of the disease, would it also include data sets like pre-treatment, comorbidities, or safety events? Ongoing.
In principle, from our algorithmic point of view, we do not make particular assumptions of what the individual variables are that go into such a model. These could be of different nature. Of course, demographics plays an important role. So comorbidities, measures of disease severity, etc. And of course, and this is something that we have particularly worked on during last years. We are interested to not only learn and this data on a baseline characteristic level, but really also longitudinally. Yeah. So at the end of the day, we generate synthetic patient trajectories.
Where is that patient level data coming from?
This comes from different studies. So in our case, for example, we have one of the collaborators in our project who has access to a larger set of Alzheimer's disease studies, and they are made available to us. Yeah? And now we are able to train our models on these data. And then another work stream, which starts in the near future, is also to additionally leverage real-world data, in fact. So this is, of course, data of very different nature. This is data from hospitals in Bologna and Valencia, yeah. And there also the idea is to leverage these type of data then to build generative models. And real-world data has different characteristics than data from clinical studies, because in real-world data, of course, you do not have this typically high depth of assessment of individual patients, but you have a much more shallow, let's say, assessment. So, for example, you may not see there, in the case of Alzheimer's disease, a lot of standardized questionnaires that assess cognitive performance, but just something at the diagnostic level. Is this person, for example, cognitively impaired or demented? You may see imaging data, comorbidities and prescriptions, but very irregular compared to a study, much less systematic, which generates its own challenges.
Yeah, these are two extreme hospital data. Another extreme would be claims data. There's yet another set of data, prospective observational studies set in Alzheimer's. Do you have access to these as well?
Yes, exactly. As pointed out via one of our collaborators, we have access to a larger number of cohort studies in the Alzheimer's field. It's also worthwhile to mention that during efforts in the last years, we have also at our own institute collected a larger number of studies in this area. We recently counted the total aggregate number of patients in all of these studies now, which amounts to about 65,000 or so. So we have a significant data stack.
Yeah, that's definitely quite a size in terms of sample size to work on. What are the ultimate goals and use cases of such synthetic data?
So there's, of course, different ideas why people are interested in synthetic data. One relatively practical one is the original idea, actually facilitating data sharing. So obviously data sharing or sharing patient level data is incredibly difficult in Europe because you run into all sorts of legal problems. So therefore, one of the original thoughts behind synthetic data generation was to have a sneak preview for data scientists, something that mimics characteristics of real data and allows people to develop codes while waiting for access to the real data. This is also the reason why we are in Germany, also partners in this national health data infrastructure. So we delivered an approach to generate synthetic data, but also, for example, an assessment tool that says how good or bad is such synthetic data compared to the real one and what might be also associated risk, privacy risks that are still discussed with synthetic data. So this is the one idea. But then there's also, and this has become also the main motivator now behind this Cynthia IHI project, also further ideas, such as we could augment real data with synthetic data to expand sample sizes. This is already done in the imaging field a lot. So where you have, for example, an object that you rotate it simply, artificially, and you generate therefore new views. This is shown to demonstrate a strong value when you train AI models. So now, of course, an open question is, which is something similar like this also possible for other types of data in medicine, for more structured data?
Extrapolation of data.
In a way, yes. And a third motivator can be facilitate clinical studies in the future. Can we generate synthetic control arms, for example, specifically in areas where recruitment of patients might be difficult because the disease is rare or they have a subgroup of patients which is difficult to get. For example, think about children or pregnant women or whatever. These are other motivators. Depending on how you do it, synthetic data may allow us to interpolate between real data, for example, longitudinally between visits. Synthetic control also could help also to design a future study, because there's, if you design a new trial, you have to think, when should patients come in? If you have an idea how this could look under different scenarios, this could help.
I want to go back to what you mentioned, patients. Could it be that, for example, in a typical phase 3 study, we have very often a one-to-one ratio between active and placebo. So could it be that instead of one-to-one, we have a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 or 4-to-1 ratio with much less patients on placebo and augment them with synthetic patients?
That might be a possibility, yes, of course. If you have certain subgroups of patients that you think might be relevant, but have underrepresented in your study. Yes. And then you may be able to oversample this subgroup if you want, yeah, to due to this synthetic data generation.
Okay. So for very old patients in Alzheimer's study.
Yeah. Very old or very young.
Or for patients that have a specific pretreatment or comorbidity. Yeah. I think this is only possible for placebo patients or comparator patients, not for active patients. Would you agree with that?
Yes and no. Of course, there are thoughts to use generative AI models and developing digital twins. Yeah? In a digital twin, the idea is at a given point in time, ask the question, can we simulate a statistical distribution of possible future disease trajectories. And now you can imagine if I had already the idea how the effect of a certain given medication was, a lifestyle intervention or whatever. Yeah? So if I knew the effect size, at least on average, so then I would be able to also counterfactually simulate such a intervention. And that can be, is also a different way how synthetic data might help.
Yeah. How do we, because a synthetic patient comes more or less free of charge, how can we think about sample sizes when we basically get patients for free? Does that work?
I would say not for free. These generative models are trained on real data. That means they are as good or bad as the real data.
Okay.
And of course, they are also as representative or not as the real data as you want. You cannot circumvent these limitations.
Yeah, but if I, let's say, if I have a clinical trial and I have 4 patients on active for everyone on placebo, I could sample, let's say, the same number of placebo patients from generative AI, triple the time, quadruple the time, of patients. In what sense do I get penalized for having more virtual patients?
And not penalized actively, but of course, from a, for example, study design perspective, and also calculate through different scenarios in terms of sample size also, yes? But again, so you have to, at this point, keep in mind, so that the model and the synthetic data is based on, at the end of the day, real data, which has limitations and representativeness. There's no free lunch in that sense. So that's because the statistics still holds true.
Yes. Can you describe a little bit about the costs of it? Of course, it costs, training the model and so on. But once it is trained, is it free thereafter?
In a way, training such models costs time and computing. You need to optimize these models. Yes, of course. Yeah. But yes, after the model has been trained, of course, you can sample as much as you want. Think about the situation that I learn or estimate simply the parameters of a Gaussian distribution. And then, of course, yes, if I have that and if these parameters are good estimators of the population characteristics, I can sample from it as long as I want. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, I think, a good analogy.
When do you think you will get some kind of concrete examples from that? This is IHI project.
This project started in September and runs for 5 years. We are generating first results internally and we'll publish them. Yeah. I should say so that we are a principal in this field since quite a number of years now. Yeah. So synthetic data generation, and we have also published approaches with real data in Parkinson's field as well as in the Alzheimer's field. Yeah. So this is not, it's not starting from scratch here, what we are doing.
I think that is very often the case for these public-private partnerships. There's usually some basis that you build on. Very often, even after the 5 years have ended, there's some kind of further collaboration and potentially follow-up IHI projects.
Absolutely.
As a sequel.
And that's, of course, what we are interested in. At the end of the day, it's a network. This is how I see that, where we are part of and like to be part of. And of course, we are interested that this is long term. You know the people, they know us, so there's mutual trust.
We'll definitely put the link to this IHI project into the show notes, so you can see what kind of organizations are involved and see whether potentially your organization, your company, your university is already part of that. These collaborations tend to be quite big, especially for such areas that are of interest for many universities and many, many companies.
Thanks, Holger.
For the listener interested in learning more about creating data based on generative AI, what would be a good step?
You can contact me on that matter. There are publications, yes, from a scientific point of view from us, but of course also from others. Yeah. We are also at the moment in fact also out of this Cynthia project generating also a review paper on existing approaches there. Yeah. Also for different data modalities. Feel free to contact me directly.
Thanks so much for that great offer. And thanks a lot for this awesome discussion about synthetic data, about IHI, and how that will change the way we think about running clinical trials in the future. I think that is a really super interesting field. It would be interesting to see the regulatory view, payer view on these topics, and the whole scientific community, how well they will think about this.
Absolutely. Cynthia, there is a dedicated work stream on that. Yeah.
Thank you
for this interesting discussion.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS, well put the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.